This is Ron Stockton.
Hello. Are we ready? This is lecture two on public opinion. I hope you've listened to lecture one. So I would like to tell you about the first really great public opinion book ever written, analyzing public opinion. Not just what people think, but the structure of how people think. And it was done actually in Ann Arbor by political scientists in the University of Michigan. There were four of them. Kemple, Converse, Miller, and Stokes. You don't have to remember those names, but for those of us who studied political science in the 1960s, those were like gods. They're all gone now. But Ann Arbor has what is called the Institute of Social Research, ISR, and that's a big. It's actually based in the University of Michigan, but it's a consortium, as it's called. That is, a group of universities came together to create this, and then the University of Michigan has within that overall structure their own. Agency, which is called the Survey Research Center, SRC. And that's what does amazing public opinion studies. And they typically get a big grant from the National Science Foundation every 4 years to do a major study of presidential voting and opinion and that sort of thing. So that's very significant. Now, they did this a book that they published in the early 60s. I've forgotten the year, maybe 65. And they analyzed public opinion polling that they had done in 1952, 1956, and 1960. So that's a long time ago. But on the other hand, they developed insights that were really quite beyond what anyone else had discovered. Now, here's what I want you to do. I'm going to give you, they found a chain of causality. That is, A produces B produces C produces D. So as you're taking notes on this, I want you to save a little space where you can write A, B, C, D, E, or whatever it turns out to be, and write in the variable, and then discuss what, and then write down what they found about it. So here's what they found. First, they focused on the level of information. They wanted to know, do people actually know anything about the political system? So they developed a list of, I think, maybe 10 questions that they ask people, like who's the governor, name your senator, how long does a senator serve, or how long does a member of the House of Representatives serve, those kinds of questions. And they compiled an index. An index means you add different things together. It's like your score on an exam. You know, you get, it's a 50-point exam, you got 40 right, so the professor just adds up all the corrects. So they would create an index, which meant all the correct answers. And then, today, by the way, we've reduced that to two or three questions. You don't have to ask 10. It's like you don't have to interview 30,000 people to predict an election outcome. You can do it with 900 or 1,000. And so likewise, you don't have to ask 10 questions. Usually two or three will be enough. I did a major survey with some colleagues a few years ago, the Arab American Study and the Detroit Arab American Study. And there's a book published on this. And we just ask, I think, two questions. So political scientists, survey researchers have really got this down to a science. They have. And so they ask people, how informed are you asking these questions? And then they rank them. Really informed, they know a lot. Pretty informed, and then not very informed. And there were a few people who don't know anything, really. For people who spend all their life, like me, eating and drinking and breathing politics, to realize there are people out there who don't even know who was running for the Democratic nomination, They've never heard of that. They pay no attention. They're not interested. They hate politics, whatever it may be. But there are such people. And you know what? Those people have the right to vote. Isn't that amazing? People who don't know anything have the right to vote. Well, okay, let's continue on this. So they classified people according to how much they knew. Then they ask them a second set of questions. What do you think is the real difference between Democrats and Republicans? Or maybe there's no difference. Or what do you think is the difference between the two main candidates who are running for office? Or maybe there's no difference. And so they ask about the parties and the candidates. And again, they got a variety of answers. So this is number two. Variable number two. We called it level of conceptualization. Some people thought the real issues are big, major issues like the future of the country, the very nature of the country. That's a very high level of conceptualization. It's kind of ideological, isn't it? There's a second group of people. They weren't very many. Maybe 15% of the public thought in those terms, that there are really big issues, big long-term issues involved here. Then they found there was a second group of people who talked about group interest. What do we mean by that? Well, I mean that I was at a family reunion in 2016, just before the election, and my family members are all coal miners, and they were all mad at Hillary. They said she's going to try to get rid of all the coal mines, which I think she was probably. They wanted to shift entirely to non-fossil fuel. What does that mean if you're a coal miner? That means that the government contracts are going to go to people who do not use coal. And so they were saying, you know, she's going to put us all out of work. Well, that's a reasonable point of view. If you're a coal miner and somebody says, I want to get rid of fossil fuels, you're pretty much SOL, as they say. And so you're going to vote on that basis. Or people may say, you know, the economy is going great. I'm going to vote for whoever's in office. I'm going to vote for Trump because things were going great. Or I'm going to vote against Trump because the economy is now falling apart because of coronavirus. Okay, that's we might call that group interest. 45% of the people, according to the study that was done by the Survey Research Center and these famous political scientists, 45% of the public thought in terms of group interests. What's in it for me, basically? Or what's in it for the country? Or something like that. Then a third group thought almost entirely in terms of personality. Well, I really like Trump. He stands up for what he believes. Or I hate Hillary. I just can't stand the woman. Or I love Hillary. I don't know what it is. You know, maybe some people hate Trump. Some people hate Trump. They think he's a repulsive person. So I'm never going to vote for that person. Even if I'm a Republican, I'm not going to vote for that person. And so this has to do with the personality of the candidate, whether you like them or not. People said that George W. Bush won election because they asked people, who would you like to have a beer with? And everybody said, oh, George Bush, he seems like a fun guy. And which he was. He's a kind of a fun guy. And so he would probably tell you some naughty jokes and a couple of stories he shouldn't tell about his dad and that sort of thing. So this has to do with assessment of a personality. It doesn't really have to do with politics. And those are about 22% of the people, according to the studies that were published in this famous book. And then there were people who couldn't even answer the question. They said, I'm not interested in politics. I don't know about the parties. I don't know about the candidates. I don't know about the issues, and I care less. And please leave me alone. I'm going to go back to my ball game, except today we don't have ball games, do we? But anyway, I'm going to go back to my ball game, or I'm going to go do what I do, or I'm going to have another beer, or whatever it may be. Those were about 18% of the public that just didn't know anything. But you know what? Those people have the right to vote. So we have four groups. Those who think ideologically or whatever you want to call that, there may be 15%. Those who think in terms of group interest or how things are going, those are about 45%. Those who think in terms of the personality of the candidate, those are about 22%. And those who don't seem to know what's going on and couldn't care less, those are about 18%. So that's the second variable. Now, can you kind of guess that the first variable, how much you know, and the second variable, your level of conceptualization, those are kind of linked together, aren't they? If you are really knowledgeable, if you know a lot, you probably can figure out that the parties are different from each other. I'm always amazed at those people who say the parties are both the same. I'm not sure quite what they're thinking, but I know what I'm thinking, that they really haven't read a lot. They don't understand what the party positions are and how they're structured. But anyway, what these people found was, okay, you got your little chart there that I told you to write down. A produces, A leads to B. There's a linkage. The more information you have, the higher your level of conceptualization. Does that make sense? Now, there's a third variable. It's called partisanship. That means, are you Democrat or Republican? Or neither of the above. So they asked people, are you a Democrat or Republican? Some people said, well, I'm a by-gum Democrat, or I'm a by-gum Republican. I'll never be anything else. Okay, we got those pretty clear. But some people said, well, I'm not really either one. And they said, okay, you're not either one, but do you kind of lean more to the Republican side or lean more to the Democratic side? And so a lot of people are able to answer that. Some people are kind of reluctant to say that they're Democrat or Republican. I don't know why that is. But if you ask them, okay, do you lean one way or the other? They'll often say, I'm an independent. And then you say, okay, are you an independent who leans to the Democrats or leans to the Republicans? They can usually answer that. So at this point now, we've got four categories, don't we? The strong Democrats, the strong Republicans, the weak or leaning Democrats, and the weak or leaning Republicans. Okay, you following? That should be pretty clear. And then finally, you've got a group who say, I don't identify with a party. People are often called independents if they give you that answer. But I don't like that term. I say that I prefer independent. Sounds kind of strong. Like I look at the candidates and I make my decision. I don't follow party lines. But if you ask those people who say, well, I'm an independent, I don't really identify with either party, and then you ask them, well, how did you vote in the last election? Well, I voted for Trump. Well, how did you vote in the previous election? Well, I voted for Romney, or, you know, and then you realize they're voting a straight party, but they just don't like to say it. So what we've discovered is that among those people who say they're independents, a large number of them today are not. They just say that. And in fact, what we've discovered is that those people who say they're independents, they're more likely statistically to be Republicans than Democrats. Okay, now, do we have our little chart that I told you to write down? A leads to B leads to C leads to D leads to E, right? Here's what these researchers found. That if you are well informed about the issues, if you have a high level of conceptualization, that is, you think that there are really different visions of the country and that one party is different from the other, then you're likely to favor one party or the other, aren't you? If you're well informed and you know what the issues are, and you think there are really big differences involved here, then you're going to be either a Republican or a Democrat, I think. Okay, fourth issue that they discovered. How did you vote in the last election? How did you vote in the previous election? What they discovered was that these people vote consistently. If you're well informed, and if you have a high level of conceptualization, and you identify with one party or the other, you're going to vote for that party pretty consistently. So these people are strong Republicans, I should say, consistent Republicans or consistent Democrats. So now we have four variables, don't we? You are not likely, if you're well-informed and think there's a big difference between the parties, you are not going to flip from Democrat to Republican or Republican to Democrat, are you? You're going to be pretty consistent. Now, you may dance around and say, oh, I'm going to vote for the man, not the party, or maybe the woman, who knows, but I'm going to vote for the person, not the party. Well, yeah, but the fact is, as with Harris sitting down with John Kennedy, he knew more about the undecideds than they knew about themselves. So these people vote very consistently. Or at the bottom of the scale, if think of it the other way. If you are ill-informed, you don't think the parties are different, you don't even understand what politics is all about, they're just all in it for themselves. You'll hear people say that kind of thing. You don't identify with a party. The Democrats and Republicans are all the same. You can't tell the difference. They all lie. Then you're not going to be loyal to one party or the other. You're going to jump from one party to the other party because you don't know the difference anyway. If you're at the bottom of those variables. Now, at this point, I'm getting a little bit discouraged because those ill-informed people who just shoot off their mouths about crazy things, coronavirus is a hoax, we should go to war with Iran, we should expel 11 million people who came to this country without paperwork, I don't know, whatever the issues are. Those people can still vote. It's kind of scary, isn't it? The people who know nothing can vote. So now we come to our last variable, the fifth variable that they analyzed. It's called turnout. Turnout. Do you actually vote? Once again, we've got these four variables. These variables predict to whether you actually vote. If you are well-informed, you're probably going to vote. If you have a high level of conceptualization, you think politics is really about something important, you're probably going to vote. If you're well-informed, you're probably going to vote. If you strongly identify with the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, you're going to vote. And you're going to vote consistently. You're going to vote for your party over and over year after year. Even if your party nominates someone who's not very bright or not very impressive, you nominate Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, two of the most unpopular candidates in the history of presidential elections. You're going to end up voting for your candidate. I had two relatives, strong Republicans, very conservative, who said to me during the primaries, under no circumstances would I ever support Donald Trump if he were nominated as the Republican candidate. Both of them voted for him. Why did they do that? Well, because of those things we've just discussed. So let's talk about a few other things. Let's see, how have we been doing? Oh, 19 minutes. Okay, this is good. We can talk like another 10 minutes and discuss a few more things. Let me see, what do I want to discuss with you? Things have changed a little bit over the years. It used to be, I'm talking maybe 10 years ago, 15 at the most, It used to be that both of our parties were what should I say? They had wings. The Democratic Party, if you draw you know, we've looked at that chart, like the normal curve, right? Think back to the normal curve, right? If it's normal, it's sort of balanced, half one side, half the other side. If that's unclear, hit pause, go to the internet, see what a normal curve is, and then come back. Okay, I think you're okay with that. The Democratic Party, if that line, the x-axis, was liberal on the left and conservative on the right, the center of the Democratic Party would be to the left. But there were always some conservative Democrats. These were called the Blue Dog Democrats. That's just, I don't know why they're called that. They were just called Blue Dog Democrats. These are the sort of conservative Democrats. Senator Manchin of West Virginia is one of them. He's a Democrat, but he's kind of conservative. He's from a conservative state. He can't get reelected if he just votes a straight liberal ticket. So he'll sometimes vote to confirm a Trump nominee to the Supreme Court, and everybody else in the Democratic Party is voting no. He does that kind of thing. And likewise, there are some moderate Republicans. There aren't many left. They were all driven out, just the way the Blue Dog Democrats were mostly driven out. But there are some moderate Republicans. Other Republicans call them RINOs, R-I-N-O, Republican in name only. Mitt Romney is one of those. There are times he's very, very conservative, but there are times when he'll criticize Trump or maybe vote with the Democrats on some issue like impeachment. And so there are such people. Now, you know what's happened over the last 15 years? Those minority wings have been basically wrecked. The Blue Dog Democrats, they were mostly in the South. They're gone. There are very few left. And the moderate Republicans, they're basically gone. A couple are left. Maybe in New England or somewhere, I don't know, but not many. Susan Collins is sometimes called a moderate Republican. Aren't many of those left. So there's no longer a normal curve. The center of the Democratic Party has moved to the left. The center of the Republican Party has moved to the right. So this makes it really hard for the two parties to cooperate with each other, doesn't it? That's kind of obvious. When the center was close to the center, when there was a wing of conservative Democrats and a wing of moderate Republicans, you can imagine these people working with each other and working out deals. And now there's extreme polarization. This is true also in public opinion. If we ask people, are you a moderate, or are you a conservative, or are you a liberal, or are you a strong liberal, or a strong conservative? What we discover is that people are split really strongly. Republicans today, it's interesting, Democrats are more mixed than Republicans are. Republicans are more of an ideological party. I have a poll here from a few years ago, but still it's representative, I think. Republicans, you ask them, how do you classify yourself? This can't possibly be right. I'm sorry, I'm reading the wrong study. I'll have to get back to you on that. This is something that's happened in recent years, and it's very disappointing to see that it's very, very hard to get people to work together in Congress. We're really a very divided country today, And public opinion has shown this.